We are 4 years and 3 months into 14 days to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Anderson alongside Melissa from Cutting Through the Matrix. Melissa, it is once a fortnight. It is good to see you. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, it has been a lovely sound check where we have gone through and we have cleared up all the bugs from all the updates and we've reset everything and we're happy to get back on track. Shall we start with the election? Shall we go there? Should we start with bird flu? Because bird flu is going to shut down the election. There won't be an election because of bird flu. I got a notice just a little while ago. They're trying to push the idea now that there are 36 mice in New Mexico that have tested positive for the H5N1 bird flu. So now that they've got 47 total. Right. That's according to the USDA. OK, so it's a government agency. So a federal government agency at that. So, you know, they're trustworthy. You know, you can believe every word they're saying. They say that a few of them have gotten away, though, and it could affect the poultry plants they have down there. You know, the poultry farms. So they might have to deal with all of that. So, you see, you might have to cancel the election. You might not have any eggs or chicken. And, you know, they've also found it in cattle. Yeah. So we might have to get rid of the meat, the beef. Yeah. Can't have milk either.
I'm trying to get a visual on this. You know, how many mice did they test?
Well, they've got a total of 47 so far that they've tested positive that they know of.
That have tested positive. So we don't know how many they tested, but 47 have tested positive. See, I'm trying to understand the whole process of testing a mouse. Did they get in their little mouse mobile and drive to a testing station?
Maybe had one of those drive-up testing places. Yeah,
was it, you know, say 150 of them on a, you know, a mouse train?
Could be. Yeah, and just like everything else, you got a free treat when you're on your way out. Maybe they got a little wedge of cheese, you know, after they got tested.
That's it. Yeah, you know, it's such a farce. I think you're right, though. The point is the elimination. It's to get in there and destroy part of the food chain. That's the plan with this round, I think.
And I think they've already got a good start on that. And it's been one of those things that have happened since COVID. It hasn't really been talked about too much. We had over, was it 1,000 food processing centers that were blown up or caught fire just mysteriously or something mm-hmm. like that? No one ever paid any attention to it. It was just, oh yes, oh yeah, this place over here just, you know, just went up in flames. This place over here, and I was reading a couple of weeks ago that one of our largest chicken farms in, I want to say it was in Iowa, I believe is where it was, and it had 1.5 million laying hens in it, and they all died in a mysterious fire.
Yeah.
So the food supply has been under attack for quite some time, but it's not been paid attention to at all. The media hasn't even touched it with anything. I don't think they've even talked about one incident of it.
There was one last year here where a Texas cattle farm, not a huge one, but big enough, had a fire on it. And they actually said in the mainstream news, seriously, that this was possibly because of the methane that the gas the cows put out, the methane gas caused an explosion.
Okay.
And then there
because it just spontaneously combusts like that. It just, you know, when cows just flatulate, it just explodes out of the backside. This is farcical.
It is. So these are there are a lot of big examples, and it did seem, I mean, the food supply has been under attack for decades, and when you think about genetic modification and big agri versus the small farm, you know, so it's been under attack for a long time, but they really have ramped it up during the last 4 years, for sure. I just read an article this morning. I'm going to take a look at it. That was just so very sad to me. And this was a small concern in Michigan. I can't actually find it now, but it was a co-op that started off with, here it is. It's called Nourish Co-op in Michigan. And it's two sisters, and now one of the sisters has a fiance, and they run it a small thing. They had started Angel Acres Farm in 2020, and they wanted to have birds that were genuinely free range and not fed corn and soy, which are some of the most modified feeds. They wanted to have grass-fed cattle, et cetera, et cetera. So they're doing everything right in terms of what's good for people to eat. And they were raided in May. This is not the first time, but they were raided in May. The first, she talked about what happened a year ago. This was in 2023. They just came in and confiscated their hogs because of blah, 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 you know, some bureaucratic red tape thing. And they ended up having to, even though there was nothing wrong with them, the government would not allow them to even eat that for personal consumption. They had to burn their pigs and then bury them in a landfill. And now they were raided again about a week and a half or two ago. And they've lost about $90,000 worth of product. Raw cheese, raw milk, some eggs, et cetera, et cetera. They were able to fight the raw cheese claim, you know, and show that they had everything done correctly by the book on that one. But the rest of the product, and at this point, you know, since it's been sitting there unsold, uneaten for 2 weeks, it's probably garbage. So this is what's happening. And that's just the latest, right? Because you hear about these kind of raids. Often it's on an Amish or Mennonite farm where they're doing some kind of raw, you know, but you hear about this all the time.
Yeah.
They don't want people to eat good food.
No, they don't. No, not at all. They want you to eat the junk, the processed stuff. And that, as a matter of fact, it's worse than that now. Now they want to remove all of the labeling on the foods. That's been an initiative for quite some time. And I know that one of our other guys here, Vince, he and I talk about health and wellness stuff. There's been ballot initiative after ballot initiative in California, of all places, to have the lobby has been to remove the ingredient labels on packaged food. So you wouldn't even know what's in it. I mean, that's just, it's bad enough that people have to eat the stuff that's over there as it is now, you know, all the processed and prepackaged and frozen stuff and everything else. But to not know what is in there?
Well, you don't need, Johnny, you don't need to know. All you need to know is Soylent Green is people.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently. Yeah. No, thank you.
It's awful.
More than that, they want to remove the staples that are in the human diet. They want to remove, for example, meat, you know, and we're talking about the, you know, what they're doing, the attack of farms. And they want to remove that and they want to replace it with insects. You know, they want to move all this insect protein and everything into your diet, not knowing what any of that stuff is going to do, what kind of long-term problems that's going to cause. Mm-hmm. And we actually did, Bruce and I, a while back, we actually did a lot of things on this. On the insects and what it actually causes. And it's not even just like the fake meat products that Vince and I just did a podcast on 2 weeks ago. Your body cannot process this correctly. So
there's
not a way for the digestive process to break that stuff down to turn it into actual nutrition. So what are you actually doing to yourself? You're going to become weaker. You're going to become sicker and you're going to fall off of that tree like a rotten piece of fruit into the hands, voila, the pharmaceutical company.
Yes. Yeah. See, this is the thing, you know, seed oils have really come to the attention of people.
Now you triggered
me. Okay. I mean, they're processed. One of the things that makes them so bad is that they're processed with gasoline. There's nothing natural or real about the product. It's once you get into how they're processed, the kind of energy that it takes, plus the gasoline, plus the fuel to extract a little bit. Because think about it, you know, you've got a little tiny, tiny seed and you're trying to expel some. That's why they, you know, you want avocado or olive oil. You want something where you can actually press the oil out of it without applying, you know, tons of pressure and gas. So. And people, it's these things that the body doesn't know how to process, like Vince was telling you, that cause obesity, immune weakness. It's bad. It's bad.
More than that, it just
and this even, is what they want.
Sound good. Yeah, it doesn't even sound good. I mean, how you can ingest that stuff is that's beyond me.
So I triggered you. What is your beef on
My beef? Can I still get that? Is that still on the menu?
What's your beyond beef?
Beyond beef. It, like, is one of the things I have over here. They have like chicken, like pork, like bacon, like beef, you know, all that. Yeah, it's called, the company's called Like. So it's like the, what you know. It's, and they have the this wonderful picture on each one of the products of just what it should look like. inside is just this glob of just disgusting stuff. My problem, my gripe with seed oils is the carcinogens that are involved with it. And it's that's you're literally poisoning yourself is what you're doing when you ingest the seed oils.
Seriously, it's when you eat something, a processed food that has soybean oil or whatever, you know, they give you some, they don't, sometimes they won't even tell you, is it canola? Is it cottonseed? Whatever. They'll just say it could be one of those things. When you read the label, it's, you know, possibly one of those, right? The problem is, well, you might as well just drink a little bit of gasoline if you want to talk about carcinogens, because that's really what it is. It's disgusting.
Well, I'm going to show you something equally as disgusting. Somebody sent me this the other day. They were at a grocery store and they found this and they sent me a photo of it because they knew that if they told me, I probably wouldn't believe it. This is an actual product that is on the shelf. It is called yellow coloring. It is a spice. It is a seasoning.
Called yellow coloring.
I did not know that yellow coloring was a thing. Now, if you look at the ingredients, yellow corn flour, FD&C yellow number 5, extractives from, I'm not sure, and red 40, contains bioengineered ingredients. Boy, that sounds nice and healthy, doesn't it?
I mean, it's no wonder that people can't think anymore, because, you know, the fuel that we need to live has been so compromised for so long. So that's where we're headed. I don't know where we started in this conversation, but where we're headed is to not have anything except what's probably squeezed out of a tube, and that's what you get.
Yeah, I'm not interested in any of that. All right, let's just move on from there, shall we?
We were going to go to the election.
Well, yeah, we were actually going to go to the election. Is there going to be one? I mean, I know we talked about the elections and things like that, and it, honestly, it doesn't really matter to me because we were kind of discussing before of kind of what's going on here in Europe, more specifically what's going on in Germany with the flip and what's going on in France with the flip. Mm-hmm. And I expect a similar kind of flip possibly in the UK in the next 3 weeks when they have their general election. I don't know. And it's possible that it could flip even further in France because Macron dissolved the parliament 3 days ago and mm-hmm. has called for a snap election in, I think, 3 weeks from now. It's going to be end of the summer. I'm sorry, end of the summer. So it'll be end of September, I think I read this morning. But I expect that to flip again, and I expect that to go to Le Pen's party. But these are elections that are going to be taking place in European countries, more specifically to the U.S. Donald Trump is now a convicted felon. That's happened since you were last on. The circus performance that I feel like I'm watching is playing out in textbook fashion, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's, I mean, your first question, will there even be an election, I think it's going to be interesting, that's for sure, because the media has been sounding the Civil War. I think there's a new movie out called Civil War, or that came out, I didn't keep up with it, but, you know, the idea that the division in the U.S. has become so pronounced that there's nothing that any politician can do. There's nothing that the electoral process can do to mend this because people are so divided. I don't know if that's true or not, but there is pretty deep division in people's attitudes and outlook on everything. And I think that last 4 years has shown us this. It's way more than politics. I mean, this is an oversimplification, but is it woke versus the remnants? And that's all you can say, the remnants of something that's a little more conservative or old values. This is a big division.
It is. I don't see any old values at all. I look at what passes for conservatism now, and I don't identify with that, any of that at all. I don't. I feel like I'm watching something out of like a high school pep rally when I see this nonsense.
If you look at it, you know, just from the people who show up at the rallies and, you know, the protests and so forth. Yeah, I think you're right. But if you look at the people that these politicians are going for, there is an idea, because the reality versus the idea. The reality is, I don't think that there's anything even conservative of the very little, I should say, left of God, family, values that you might have seen in 1950 or 1930. There's very little left of that because it's been very watered down. But they're appealing to people who remember that and people who think that it's the move away from that that is the problem. That, I think, is what's going on, because I think the reality is that's all gone. I was just having a conversation with someone yesterday, I think, and we were talking about what I noticed in the run-up to the 2016 election in the U.S. was that it seemed to be an opportunity for the conservatives, the Republicans, to bring out the LGBTQ wing very strongly. So you never saw this. You didn't see this in 2012 or 2008. You never saw people who said, I am a gay man and I am a Republican. I mean, at least not in the numbers, with the volume, with the, you know, presence that it was given in 2016. This was a deliberate and very big push. And so that carried through up until 2020. Then you've got 2020. And Biden comes in, and what Biden brought was the actual, even though you would say traditionally the Democrats would be more open-armed and more embracing of the LGBTQ community, you hadn't seen the presence in the cabinet and with the appointees and the different people like his press secretary and so forth, all identifying very vocally as LGBTQ, or like Buttigieg with his husband and their two adopted babies doing their photo op in bed together with the little babies. You know, this was again a new level of normalization. And to now the appointee for the Libertarian Party is homosexual. He's gay.
Oh, is so, he? I didn't know that he was. I thought it was just one of those things that he was in support of. I didn't know that he was.
No, he is vocally homosexual out for his entire career. However long he's been messing around in politics, I think he started out as a Democrat and then probably 10 or a dozen years ago moved over into the Libertarian camp. But I mean, we don't need to get into a conversation about what does it mean in the U.S. to be a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian. But if we just look at the economic values that are being espoused, both of the parties that are supposed to be fiscally conservative have moved so far away from what the parties claim to represent that you are left with nothing. Slogans, you know, yeah. Close down the borders.
Yeah. And
make America great again.
Yeah. Yeah. MAGA. I was watching some clips last night, and it pains me to watch that stuff now. But you know how it is. We have to watch that stuff just so we can speak on it for what we do. And I was watching Trump at one of these rallies last night, and he's just playing a comedian is all he's doing. That's all I can see out of him. Is he's talking about things that are going on, you know, such as inflation, but it's a comedy show. Like it's like it's something we're supposed to laugh at. No, I want to see some concrete decisions that need to be made to get that reversed, because people are hurting and they're hurting today. So I don't want to hear some court jester up there giving me some nonsense. Yeah. I want some actual solutions being put forward as to how that's going to be fixed. And all I get is a MAGA hat, and we're talking about rather crab dip at the Cheesecake Factory is warm or cold.
Trouble is, Johnny, what you're asking for, and I know you're more or less asking for that rhetorically, you know, you want to see, when what's really the issue here is that politics is a show. has been a show. It's theater, has been theater for all of our lifetimes. This is a very hard, you always have hope. There's always like some tiny little part until you've either excised it completely or hardened against it that thinks, well, you know, this person sounds like some of what they're saying, you know, makes sense. And, you know, but if you realize that they didn't get to that level where they are unless they were vetted and groomed and, you know, Trump has been groomed, I think, to be the clown. It's very elaborate, if you think about it, you know, down to this, the never ending impeachments and the trial and the fact that he's the first candidate who's been convicted of a felony. I mean, it's an elaborate piece of theater, but that's what it is.
I don't like any of it. I'm just going to throw that out there. I don't like any of it. I don't like the choices that, I mean, it's always been a vote for the lesser of two evils, right? That's always mm-hmm. what we've been, all you just vote for him because it's better than the other guy, you know, it's better this way than that way. Well, I'm tired of both. You know, I don't want whatever's on the menu. I want something else. I'm tired of this. I'm tired of this restaurant. I want a new restaurant, you know, yeah. Just to kind of put it into perspective. I don't like what's on this menu anymore. I don't like the Democrat way. I don't like the Republican way. I don't like the Libertarian way. I'm ready for something else. That doesn't mean we tear down what we are. I know that that's become the rallying cry, and maybe we can kind of segue over into the Europeans and what they're doing with this. But the whole premise of this is, well, that you make the argument, well, okay, yeah, you don't want either party, you don't want either choice you're given. Well, then that means that the talking point then becomes, well, that means you don't want the system you have, so you're going to have to tear all that out and you're going to have to replace it. No. We had a very well-working constitutional republic before it was messed with and before it was destroyed. So all I want is what we had. That's all I want. I don't. Go ahead.
Now you're going to get me going.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, hey, listen, I'm with Alan, right? So I'm going to just keep going back and back and back. It's so far in time until time is no more. But here is the deal. This is Alan said in a talk that I put up recently that was, the audio was so bad, but I couldn't help it. That's, you know, I recommend a headset. But anyway, he said to the host that he was talking with, money was the first con. So that's the original, that's where it goes off the rails. You've got to go there because it's the money that buys the soldiers. It's the money that sets up the system. If you look at a constitutional republic, I just did an interview. It was very interesting. Lots that I didn't necessarily agree with, but somebody, a historian by the name of Dr. Sean Ross, H-R-O-S-S. But the one of the interesting things that he said, which gave me a really good visual on the system down through time, he talked about vertical versus horizontal organization. He applied that to the church to show that you have Catholicism, where God is at the top, the Pope is his representative on earth, you've got the cardinals and the bishops and the priests, etc. And then you've got the horizontal organization, which you see in Protestantism, where you basically have the group of elders. So it's horizontal.
Right.
This is what the republic / democratic system is the horizontal versus the vertical, where the king is at the top and you know, like divine right of rule. So there you go. So, it's the God, it's God and then king and on down into the serf and the peasant. But what was interesting to me was when I made the visual connection in my head that vertical and lateral systems, whether secular or religious, that it's a cross. We're kind of ruled by the cross, no matter how we're organized.
Where's and the balancing act then is the question. Where do you find the balance? I mean,
You don't balance. You tear it down, even if you only tear it down in your own mind for your own satisfaction. In other words, if what you're seeking is truth, then you have to shed a lot along the way to get to that. Like if that's your ultimate journey, then you have to be willing to say, okay, everything, you know, my sacred cow Well, my sacred cow just burned in an unfortunate, you know, big agro farming disaster.
Methane accident is what.
Yes, exactly. So, but you have to be willing to let go of things that you think so. You know, Bill Cooper said this. I don't remember how he said it, but Alan said something similar, which is this. Where do you want to go back to? Because everybody, if you say, I mean, a lot of people are just going along. They don't care. They don't see it's Idiocracy. It's whatever. But for people who sense that there's something wrong, they want to go back. And Bill Cooper said, where do you want to go back to? Alan Watts said, where would you go back to? So you're talking about a constitutional republic, which is formed on good, sound principles, et cetera, et cetera. But once you start, as Mel Gibson said in the movie Conspiracy Theory, which was really great for lots of talking points, when he was carrying on about the Vatican and didn't realize that his audience were two nuns in the back seat, he said, you have to be willing to lift the scab off the festering, you know, wound or whatever that is the Vatican, that is the Catholic Church, etc. But it's funny. I mean, it's funny because it's true. Once you start to lift the scab off of your idealized founding fathers, your Jefferson, your Ben Franklin, your Lafayette, your, you know, whoever, and really look at them, what you see, not to oversimplify it, but what you will start to see is a kind of revolutionary brotherhood that has morphed like Morpheus down through time. It just keeps changing names and changing faces, and they bring us what we're supposed to have. So we can't really return to sound principles. We can't return to this because that's what they gave us for then, for that time.
Yes, what I would go back to. Can I interject really quickly?
Please do.
Jesus had a great idea of driving money changers out of a temple. I think we should.
Well, that's a start.
You know, there's no such thing as a perfect system. Maybe I shouldn't be so set in my ways because I'm really not. At the end of the day, I just I feel like I just want to go back to simpler times. You know, everything we were discussing in prep, everything is so complex now that we can barely make sense of anything. And that goes for everything, not just technology, but I think it goes for everything else. I guess I would just rather see a return to simpler times. Rather than enforcing the laws that we have, we just create new laws. It's just one thing after another. But going back, we don't have a perfect system, and no system is perfect. I don't care what it is. It doesn't really matter. What we do is, in Western societies, we take from other things that we know. So we take a little bit from this, we take a little bit from that, we take a little bit from here and there and wherever, and we just kind of put it all together and we make a system. We kind of mesh everything together and we do our best to try and make it work. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I think everything that we have done, I want to say that it really, we can kind of go back, maybe we can go back and forth about how, where it all went wrong, at least in the modern time. I think it all went seriously wrong after Kennedy was shot. That's just my opinion, because I think we were on a somewhat stable track as far as society and societal development, but we lost our way after that, and everything's been kind of stagnating. I was... when we were kind of mentioning tragedy and hope in soundcheck. And if I'm to look at that, and I said that my opinion is just kind of my, as you put it, being an armchair historian, my opinion is that we're looking at a civilization collapse of both East and West simultaneously. It's just a matter of which one's going to go first. And to put a timestamp on that, I can't say, just like you brought up. It's difficult to kind of put a timestamp on that. You can't really pin that down. But there is no doubt in my mind that we are seeing that decay that Quigley was talking about in Tragedy and Hope. I believe that it started right around, I'm going to start in the 60s is when we started to see it. We were up, and rather than do a reorganization of things like we should have done, we ended up just going the route that he talked about of a universal empire and a decay. And we're looking at a collapse because invasion comes along with that. And if we can see what's going on with all Western nations, I mean, you can call those open borders. You can call that mass migration. I call it an invasion.
Mm-hmm. You're right. The talk of Alan's that I put up on the weekend was kind of an experiment in extreme editing for me, because I failed because it was an hour and 50 minutes. Extreme editing would have allowed me to get that to an hour and a half.
You admitted your problem failure. You admitted your failure. That's that is the first step on the road to success. So you see, you're going to get better at it.
But if you let my talking aside, I think I need to learn how to speak less. But what I put up of Alan's were significant chunks of two different talks that he did, one in December of 2006 and one in January of 2007. And what I was trying to do was just pull the meat off the bone and put it in the pot for anybody who really wanted a good stew. So that was the goal. And there were a lot of amazing things that Alan said in those two talks. But what he was talking about in part was the end of an age, collapse of empire, whatever, however you want to think about it, the end of civilization as we know it and what comes after. Now, when you talk about the end of empire, I mean, we only know what we know, limited as it is, and we don't have access to the big archives, but we know what we know. Because people always make it through. Some people always make it through. And it's not just the people, you know, it's not just the troglodytes in their little caves with their collection of, you know, their artillery and their books or whatever forms of communication and weaponry they have. Other people make it through too. And what Alan was saying is it's what separates real humanity from inhumanity. But what he talked about were the legends that we have in sacred writings, literally down through history. The mythology is people become so corrupt. You could say, well, they destroy themselves or they participate willingly in their own destruction. And I see, like in the U.S., I don't know about Kennedy. I mean, certainly this is, you know, his reign, if you want to call it that, was called Camelot. So it was already given, I think it was even called Camelot while he was alive, because he and she were so elegant and, you know, they were the first telegenic politicians of our lifetime. And maybe that's one reason why we look back at that with longing, because before the Kennedys, this wasn't televised. You know, our leaders weren't televised. So we saw them looking chic and healthy and robust in the White House. We saw this.
And they were promoted internationally.
Yes. Yeah. And they represented, you know, there was so much about what they represented that was appealing. But they, whatever that was and whyever it ended, it was sort of the kickoff, if you will, to everything else that the 60s brought us. So major, major revolution, music, sex, free love, you know, all of this was right on the heels of that. And, you know, the Beatles, if you want to look at the imagery of that, they make a good companion piece to the Kennedys. You know, they start off in their little suits with their little black skinny ties, you know, and then boom, where are we? You know, long hair and dope smoking. Like, I just needed to say dope smoking so that people would know she's really right. Old.
No, that's right. That's right. If it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? You know, that's all those slogans back in the day. I'm not from that era, but I've read a lot about it. And I believe that, you know, and I don't want to dig too deep into the Kennedy thing because, you know, we could talk, I think we could probably do two or three episodes on just the Kennedy assassination. But you needed something. And there's always an inflection point when you need to make a major change. And I believe that regardless of what you think about the Kennedy assassination, whether you believe it was intentional, whether you believe it was a conspiracy thing, whether you believe the Lee Harvey Oswald, I don't care. That's not the point I'm trying to make. People can believe what they want. There's so many theories and ideas and different ways of looking at the Kennedy assassination that you could go on for hours about it. But you needed an event that shocked a young generation of people. And that's what they had. It shocked an entire generation. And they were right on cue, as you said, to lash out and to create another movement in another direction. And that's what they did.
Yeah, absolutely. And they did need that event. And when we were talking earlier, I was thinking about, you know, because you talk about values and what Kennedy represented and so forth. And I was just thinking about books that I have read about pieces of American history that would be, oh, let's say from the 1930s or the 1950s or even into the late 19th century. And what I can see are indications that the values of the people were already in a way corrupted or compromised, or, you know, it comes through in a variety of ways. And one example is one of my brothers gave me a while back a biography of Bernard Baruch. And I read it. It was published by a woman in the 1950s who had access to him at the end of his life. And just her style of writing and the way in which she characterizes the era and everything, it shows such a the values are completely secular. I don't know how to even convey what I picked up in reading the book, but let's just say it's a love of the cocktail culture. You know, it's a love of the values that are represented by corporate man made good with martini in hand and babe in arm. And you see what I'm saying? And this was in the 50s. Yeah. And it's you just keep going back and you keep going back. And what you have is a reverence for evolutionary ideals of survival of the fittest. You have a reverence for, Trump makes good. But, you know, third generation billionaire makes good all by his lonesome. Yeah. He's just a blue collar billionaire. But it's where in the, you know, specifically the American mindset, but I think you find this everywhere. Where did we go wrong that we love people ahead of values? You know, and I'm not talking about humanity. I'm talking about the icons that we're given, whether they're stars or politicians.
The celebrity culture, I think. That has been a slow push, I think. If you're to look at, and we've had this conversation before, I've had this conversation with Ned. If you're to look at let's say every 10 years, okay, so about every decade in the U.S., there was always some kind of a culture shift in, like, pop culture shift. So you had a certain way that people would dress, for example. You had a certain music style that people would listen to in the 1950s. And you had something that changed again in the 1960s, right? The Beatles and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Then the 70s came along and you had the Rolling Stones and the hard rock era started to show up. Then you had the hair bands of the 80s. Then you had the rap stuff start to debut in the 90s. But once we hit 2000 time period, so I'll just use another important inflection point, 9/11. Once that happened, it seemed like that was the end. It just kind of, like, there was a severance that was made there. There was a cut that was made. And I've not seen any cultural developments since then. Everything's just been, like, stagnant and just gray, if that's the right term. I don't know of any other way to put it. But it's always been a slow push into the entertainment culture to get us into that direction where there's no advancement of any other kind. It's just, you're given these people. These are the people you need to look at. Kardashians, as an example. Nobody knew who those people were 20 years ago. And now, right, all of a sudden, they're on every street corner, on every poster, on everybody's phone, in everybody's social media, in everybody's faces all the time. These are not even real people. These are plastic people. And they're given billions of dollars in contract deals and business deals. And they're famous for nothing. They don't know anything.
Yeah. No, it's that's a phenomenon that is quite interesting to me. And a lot of people really like them. You know, I mean, a lot across surprising socioeconomic strata, they really respond to them.
They do. And we talked a little bit to branch off from that a little bit. You also have the rise of the influencer culture as well.
Yes.
Right. So and I was telling you about this a couple of weeks ago. I was telling you about this grown man that was crying on a live stream because his character in a video game died. And this individual lives in a multi-million dollar home and has cars for hundreds of thousands of dollars and has endorsements and corporate sponsors and everything else. And people throw money at this. And I think to myself, how on earth is this possible? How is this possible? I don't know how we ended up on the track, but everything has, barring any major cultural developments that we've seen over, you know, from decade to decade, we're now just onto this track of just, these are the people you need to look at, and they're the ones you need to look up to, and that's it.
Well, the music every decade, that's interesting. And Alan said, you know, wrap it up. From his point of view, that was about the end. That's when they wrap it up. And so it's interesting that your friend makes the observation that since 9/11, we don't really have, you know, like, what's the new thing? What is it? And somebody said to me the other day, oh, there's never been a shortage of women's hairstyles. I think it's because I was with my Aunt Betty, and she was talking about 1940s hairstyle where they wrapped their hair up. And she was talking about these rolls that gave them that look. And she said that the rolls were called rats. So the women went and bought rats of different sizes, different diameters to achieve that look with their hair. And somebody else that was joining in the conversation said, well, there's never been a shortage ever of women's hairstyles. But I was thinking about where we are now and kind of having that similar thing that you were discussing about music. No, I actually see, whereas, you know, 1980s had a look, 1990s had a look, 1960s has a look. We're just in this kind of blah, nothing holding pattern with everything, with clothing, with music, because I'm sorry to say this, but I think we're just sitting here waiting in the chute.
Yeah, that's why I said it's gray. It's just like there's nothing moving. We're just kind of hanging out, and it's like we're just kind of waiting on. Okay, so to go back to the Matrix movie, it's like we're just sitting in that space where he's at the train station, and he's just sitting there waiting. And when he tries to leave, he just ends up in a loop, just going back to the same place. That's what I feel like. I feel like we're just kind of sitting there waiting on the train to take us somewhere.
But the problem is the problem is, like, if we're going to have a grand theme here to the conversation, it really does come around to the individual, because we can't change a system. We can't make the system over. And so it's like, for ourselves, how do we come through? What is our thinking? How do we keep our minds intact and so forth? Because the masses have always been the masses. And there were a couple of things that popped into my head as we were talking. The first was a book that Alan mentioned before called The Organization Man, or Organization Man, written in the 1950s. And it really is a kind of individual versus the collective. This is it was a piece of work geared for and at the businessman, the corporate man. And so you have a culture that's idealized in the West, and particularly in the U.S., you're kind of Ayn Rand, kind of.
Atlas Shrugged, yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah, which is fiction. It doesn't exist, that kind of rugged individual. That's it's always propped up by the machine. So it isn't an individual versus the collective. An individual is closer to a bit of an anarchist. An individual is someone who said, well, follow me, don't follow me, but I'm going to go in the temple and kick out the money changers. You know, that's what I'm doing, right? Okay. If you want to make a religion out of it, that, you know, I don't know, because I'm going to be long gone, but I'm going in the temple right now, and I'm going to kick these money changers out of here. What was being demonstrated there, since you brought him into the conversation, is the path of an individual. At the very best of that is the path of an individual. And it's a lonely kind of a place. But otherwise, you're left following fashion, letting your mind be constantly, because we're plastic. This is a key thing. We're so very plastic until you are somehow, by some divine miracle, hardened into your own individuality. And that means you are going to be susceptible to any kind of propaganda, whatever, wherever it takes you. You are going to be predictively programmed cradle to grave. When, you know, a listener sent me a boxed set, very nice gift, of the Downton Abbey series that came out of Britain a few years ago.
Oh, it was nice of them. Yeah.
It was very nice.
I heard that was a good series. I've never watched it, but I heard it was good.
Well, you know, every once in a while, I sit down with my brother. I think we're up to, you know, I don't know. I think there might be 50 episodes, and we're about 10 into them. So we've made good progress. But one thing I noticed so far in this series, I've gone from 1914 to 1918. And Johnny, the revolutionary, the like bomb in women's clothing between 1914 to 1918 is 4 years. And this is true. I mean, I could look at, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day that said they read the Encyclopedia Britannica cover to cover as a child. Well, I stopped when I got to costumes, you know, oh, look, that's what Cleopatra was nice. Wearing. But what you see in that 4 years is that in 1914, they had a whole thing with the slip and the this and the that and the dress that went over it and it touched, you know, got to the ankles and everything. 1918, 4 years later, women of the highest class, the landed gentry, were leaving their home in what would have been called underwear 4 years earlier. They do this over and over and over, as Alan always said. Plato said, if it works, why do it differently? You know, you just keep bringing it out. This is technique. It's called technique. Jacques Ellul wrote about it. It's technique. That's what you're going to do. That's what they did in the 60s. And what do the Kardashians do? They bring us their buttocks, you know?
Yeah, they are very pronounced about that, too. Yeah.
Yes.
These are plastic people. I'd like to throw that out there. Like, there's not a piece on them, I think, that's less than 18 months old.
Yes. And that they are genuinely plastic. But sadly, most people, the mass, are plastic. They can be melted and, you know, have a little bit of heat applied and then squished into this shape and a little more heat applied and squished into that shape. The mass is incapable of thinking or acting in a way other than what the mass does. So it's the individual that has to say, I think I'll start a podcast.
Okay.
I'll call it Dynamic Independence.
Yeah, yeah. There are those crazy people out there that do such things. Yes, I know. Yeah, I see them all the time.
And it's, you know, and it's something to, before I end the rant, I'll just say, it's a work of a lifetime. And Alan told me that it's a work of a lifetime. You must constantly be looking at the man or the woman in the mirror. It's pretty dreadful work, but you have to see where are you run by your indoctrination and your programming? You know, is there an original thought in my silly little head? Or did I really stop at Cleopatra's outfit? And was that the end for me? You know, so you have to constantly question what you're about, what you think, where did that thought come from?
Well, speaking of kind of going back to the money changers and looking at fake culture and looking at what, I mean, I guess a fake system would have to support a fake culture, right? Isn't that how it works? Right. So we got to have a fake backing behind all of that. Starting a podcast. Man, there's so many things there. Somebody that has started a podcast is a guy named Jon Stewart. I don't like Jon Stewart. I just like to point that out. You know, the former Daily Show guy. I don't really care for him. But nonetheless, he's sitting down on his podcast talking to a man named Thomas Hoenig. And he is the former president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank in Kansas City. And this is, again, this. Now, if anybody knows about what is what kind of games are being played with the money system, and this guy's going to know it. He's not there anymore. But here it is, straight from the horse's mouth.
How much currency that has been sort of created out of thin air has been added into this economy through the Fed? What would you put as a figure? Would it be $6 trillion? Is that too much?
It would be, yeah, $6 trillion in terms of deposits with the banks and currency, be $6 to $7 trillion.
Okay, that they're just injecting into it, sort of out of nothing.
Out of nothing. It's the central bank of the United States.
Now, oh
think
my
about
God!
It's just another form of government debt. Am I making sense?
It, you know, it makes sense in the make-believe world of conjuring. Like, there is a certain part of this that all feels like a mirage to some extent. Do you know what I mean? It all seems sort of fake.
Well, it's a fiduciary system. It's all faith-based.
Right? Oh, my Lord.
Yes, you got to have confidence in that currency, in that dollar. Because there's nothing backing. There's no gold backing.
So it's in some ways, it's a mass delusion.
Well, yeah, it certainly is.
This is very interesting. Alan used to give the famous Alan Greenspan quote. Yeah. But it was kind of similar. And I cannot pull it out of my head
fast enough. I know what it is. I actually know what it is. And I would have to go back. You don't have to tell me what it is because I remember the quote. I could not believe. Actually, there were two quotes that Greenspan. I could have gone the rest of my life without hearing that guy's name again.
Sorry.
The first. No, don't be. Because it's important. Some of the stuff that he said. One of the things that he said was on an interview with it was on a 60 Minutes interview. I can't remember who it was with, though. But he said that the Federal Reserve is an independent agency. And what that means is that no government can overrule actions that we take. And so long as that doesn't happen, whatever relationships we might have with those government officials, they frankly, they don't matter. Maybe that's the quote you're thinking of. But then I remember him again. About 15 years later, this is when he was an advisor in the Obama administration, and he was on Meet the Press with, David Gregory, and he said, Gregory asked him the question, he was sitting there with Austin Goolsbee, you remember Austin Goolsbee?
I don't know.
No, he works for the Fed now, yeah, oddly enough. But he was asking Greenspan at the time, he says, are U.S. Treasury bonds still safe to buy? And he says, oh, absolutely. Absolutely, they're still safe to buy. Because anytime that we have a debt, the United States, if we have a debt, we can pay any debt we have because we can just print money to do that.
Yeah, those are both really good quotes. And I'm not going to be able to find this one. But the one that Alan was liked to share was a little bit closer to this when asked about the money system and, you know, where it went and what it was about and everything. And he goes, well, how do we know anything exists? How do we know we exist? So how do we know any of this is real? And Alan said something like, well, that's who you want charging your money, right?
Yes. Well, at the end of the day, I mean, I could go on a rant and rave about the Federal Reserve Bank. But at the end of the day, that is a private company. It is a private consortium. We don't know anything about it. It's very secretive. And we've never had a single audit of anything that those people have ever done. And they.
We don't need to audit it. It's a completely phony, made up.
Well,
you
okay.
Know,
all right. Fine. Yeah, we don't need to audit. Let's just shut it down. I mean, yeah. If you're to go by the U.S. Constitution, and I know we were talking earlier about constitutional republics, but if we're to follow the letter of the U.S. Constitution, Congress is to have control of the purse strings, not a private company, not someone that issues currency and issuance of credit to the federal government. They'll just continue to expand their balance sheets. So there's no oversight. None. So you can put guys like, do you remember Osama bin Bernanke? Do you remember him?
Yeah, I
back
sure
in the
do.
Day? That guy, he'd be hauled in before Congress. And I remember Ron Paul asked him a question once. He says, is gold money? And Bernanke just kind of sat there with this dumbfounded look on his face. And he says, no. And he says, well, it's not money. He says, well, then why do central banks hold it? And he says, well, it's an asset. He's like, it's not money. It's been used for 5,000 years. And you're saying it's not money. The whole system's fake is the point I'm trying to make.
Money is the original con. Money is the original con. And if you buy that con, well, sunshine, there's no hope. If you can break through and go, because listen, gold only has the value that we or somebody, I certainly never gave it any value, but gold has the value that is assigned to it. You know, if we said that these seashells were the most valuable thing and we were going to all trade in seashells, well, that's it. You know, if it's going to be the puff that flies off a dandelion flower, then that's all of a sudden what's valuable. And people will start to grow dandelions and they'll corner the market on dandelions. I think one of the key things about money being the con is that you introduce the middleman. And with the introduction of the middleman, and that can become whole agencies, that can become reserves. They can be private reserves or federal reserves that are private, or they can become legitimate government. Yeah. But it's the middleman idea. It's whatever comes between you and the thing that you want that the other person has that you're going to trade for, you know, and you've all decided that it is what? Convenient to let somebody else create the medium of exchange and control the medium of exchange. I mean, these are the, it's, listen, if we're too late to change where the trajectory that we are on right now, but it certainly doesn't mean that we can't be asking the right questions, because some people are going to come through. Do we want to do this all again? You know, the cream that rises to the top, if you want to call it cream, sadly, is kind of psychopathic. That's who gets power.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
Well, so, we are at time here. Do you have any final thoughts before you get away for the week?
Oh, no. I think I've given you quite enough.
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about this now. I'm going to start talking about it on the episodes leading up to it. But in 10 days, we're going to have a roundtable with all the contributors on there. You will even be there.
I said I would. Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it will be on the weekend exclusive that will be coming up. It'll be 2 weeks from now is when it'll be out. Be sure and check that out. But we will be having yourself and all the other people. Even Bruce is going to come back and be on it. So it'll be a great conversation. Would you like to tell everybody about your latest podcast before you get away and what you've been working on the website?
Oh, keeping really busy. I've had several good conversations. I talked to Monica in Canada. That was delightful. And then a little extra podcast with, I mentioned Dr. Sean Ross, the historian. Really interesting things there. Robert in Alberta, Canada. I really enjoyed that. And he shared with listeners a lot about the electric universe and the sixth mass extinction and the coming mini or real ice age. In other words, what might possibly be real climate change, not this, you know, CO2.
No, we're in global boiling.
We're
in global boiling right now. You know, we're not the dinosaur, we're the meteor. Have you heard that?
Yes.
Yet?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of things. And then the Redux is, like I said, you know, I put up that mammoth one on Sunday, but personally, I think it's essential listening, not just the editing that I did on Sunday, but those two talks, they were, I'm never good at remembering titles, but I think I can do it. The one in December of 2006 was Tinkering in the Matrix of the Womb, and the one in 2007, it might have been Chaos and Caritas. There's a third C in there that I'm missing, but they're really good. It's kind of essential Alan listening. So that's what's going on. And thanks for letting me share that.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to have you on. We'll see you again. Actually, we'll see you before 2 weeks. We'll see you on the exclusive next week. So that'll be a real pleasure to have everybody together. Right, that'll do it for us for today. That is Melissa from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. I encourage all of our listeners to get over there and take a look at the treasure trove of information where she maintains the life collected works of the late, great Alan Watt. And her podcast is Real History with Melissa. That is available everywhere you get your podcasts. It's been an absolute pleasure. I will see you on the exclusive, Melissa. Thank you for being here today. Thank you to all of the listeners. God bless everyone and have a great evening. We'll be right back.